All right. She's running for the first senatorial spot. Ken LaValle obviously hanging him up after 44 years. We've been telling you about that. Her name is Laura Ahern. You know the job she does regarding Megan's Law, and a viable candidate indeed for this first district. We welcome her, and we say a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jay. Great to be here.
I was reading about you. You know, you're raising money like it's going out of style in this race. What the heck is that all about?
Well, if you want to be if you want to be considered a viable candidate, you really need to be able to develop relationships with folks that can help to fund your campaign. So I started really early, just introducing myself to many folks here in the district, obviously, folks in New York City, folks up in Albany, those individuals that that will make a commitment to help you get into that position. It's really, really important to be a good fundraiser. And I really do enjoy talking to people. I'm a social worker, so that's just part of who I am. And it's been a great experience. I really am enjoying it, believe it or not.
You know, it really seems that way. And people are kind of feeling that the other way as well. You know, they've obviously getting to know you. They have a lot of respect for you. That's the investment. And you're right. You know, it is part of it. And I've been saying this for years, doing this so long. It is a major part of a campaign. Listen, it is what it is. And listen, I sat the county executive race of Suffolk County. You have a guy who has $2 million in his coffer, another guy with $200,000 in his coffer. That's tough. That's why it's so important to elevate those numbers at any point in time. It's very important. All very important
it
part
is.
Of the campaign.
It is. It's not always, you know, when you're not involved, and obviously I've been involved politically in that. I've helped to move the mission of the organization and have worked with local, state, and federal elected officials and folks in law enforcement and prosecution. But the bottom line is that you really have to demonstrate that you can fund your campaign, because you can't rely on other elected officials and the party to do that for you. So it's really important to make sure that your commitment is demonstrated through the work that you do. And look, now, you know, more people are jumping in the race. And, you know, look, I was not in any way afraid to jump in the race when our esteemed Senator Ken LaValle was there, who has done a wonderful job for the community. Obviously, we disagree on certain issues, but I was really looking forward to a campaign based on you know, arguments over the issues and for the voters to decide. But right now, we have two folks that are already council people. I mean, they're, you know, it almost seems like, okay, they're looking for a political promotion. That's not who I am. I'm an attorney, a social worker. I've fought for our community for 25 years, developing, implementing, assessing the efficacy of problem-solving community-based programs. They're targeting particular issues. So, you know, voters have to carefully look at, well, who's shaking hands with everybody, you know, in the individual committee so that they can get help that way. I'm a person who's out in the community, and folks in the community for 25 years have seen what I've done. So I got a great team. I'm tough on crime, and, you know, this bail reform is just, you know, the goal to reduce incarceration was absolutely needed, but the methods just, you know, in application seem arbitrary. And the public's at risk. You've done a fabulous job of explaining to the general public what's happening. And people are dying because of this. So this has to be changed right away. And you've been one of the strongest advocates. I love listening to you, Jay.
Here's the thing, and I appreciate that. You know, listen, we go right to the sources. You know, we go right to the architects. You know, whether it be an Anna Kaplan, a Jim Gorin, a Monica Martinez, who we had on yesterday, or a John Brooks. You know, I mean, it is what it is. And it's not just about giving judges, and as an attorney, you know, it is not just about giving judges the authority to do their jobs again.
It's, you know, not. I took a look at the New Jersey assessment. It's called the Public Safety Assessment. It's sort of a risk factor determination. And, you know, in New York State, when we passed Megan's Law way back when, New Jersey had developed a risk assessment tool that was being used to assess the risk of offenders. Now, that is fallible. There's some serious issues with their assessment, and also now New York State kind of modeled their assessment after New Jersey's. So if we're going to start looking at an assessment now that a judge might or might not have to use, we really need to apply the cases that have resulted now in tragedies to use the tool that they're developing or will develop to see how it fares. How does that offender compare? I mean, look what you have covered. It's done a great job of covering Jonathan Flores and what Jordan Randolph's background. I mean, but look at what just happened with this bank robber. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. The guy is four times he's allegedly robbed four Chase banks in Chelsea in New York City. And then the guy gets out and he commits a fifth robbery. I mean, it's like they're putting law enforcement in a situation where they're just like running around in circles. And the offender himself is quoted in one of the articles as saying, "I can't believe they let me out." And he reoffends. It's ridiculous, Jay.
Well, you know, it's not just about the judges. I have been on the fact of this disclosure and discovery stuff as well. To me, you want to fix this, not only giving judges the power back, you must reverse this presumption of rapid disclosure. I'm sorry, you have to do that. And you must slash the rest of the new discovery requirements. I mean, at least to a level, Laura, that some of these crime labs and prosecutors can manage in a very timely manner. You cannot. And I've said this, I mean, how long have I been saying the fact that you cannot let these defense attorneys game the system? How? By gumming up the works until the prosecution gives in. Are we crazy here? We can't do that. You must. I mean, it's a fix here that has to be done. And you know what really bothers me is, you know, when I had Senator Gorin on, I have a lot of respect for, and he has coupled with Senator Monty Martinez on a couple of amendments, but it really kind of focuses on, you know, some of the heinous acts that judges would have the discretion to kind of use their powers. But it goes deeper than that. And I asked him, I said, well, why not at least put a moratorium on this thing so that you can discuss it, okay? You know, it's almost like the red light cameras here. Okay, that's a disgrace in itself. Because when you put out $250,000 in a study and you find that there's a 60% increase of crashes at some of the key intersections, well, that alone should tell you, you know what? Let's halt the program and caucus together so that we can figure out a solution. Instead, let's streamline the program, keep it as is until we can figure it out so we can keep raking in the $30 million that the county needs so desperately, okay? Same situation here, okay? It's not just about trying to get enough votes, amend, let's bring it to the floor. This needs a complete strip down to the roots.
Agreed.
And that's why you need to halt this program. If you're not going to give me a full repeal, give me a moratorium. And I'll tell you one thing. I do not want to hear Carl Hastie anymore. You know, Hastie making plenty of wasty up in Albany, as I continue to say that.
Carl Hastie, if
I have to hear from him and tell me, guess what? We're only 21 days old. No, Carl, please. Mr. Speaker, I'm giving examples on a daily basis. Okay, you want more Jordan Randolphs out there? Okay? You want more guys who are supposed to be incarcerated that are being let out? You bring up the Maldonado guy on the William Floyd?
Mm-hmm.
Killed by this guy, a drunk. Do you want more? I mean, I would ask Carl Hazel, who we put in, by the way, requests to get him on the show. No word yet. No surprise.
No, I'm sure.
You know, no surprise, by the way, of Michael Giannara is coming on this program, another architect. You know, I mean, people have to use common sense. Common sense. It's not a partisan thing anymore. It's common
sense. No, it's not. It's about saving people's lives, Jay. I mean, people are dying now.
That's what it is.
Absolutely right on. People are losing their lives, and we have, you know, the hate crimes that are being committed, even some of the lower level, that considered lower level offenses. You know, look, the bottom line is that in all of the drunk driving fatality offenses, you can't hold them for bail. They have to be released. So that means that vehicular manslaughter, leaving the scene of a fatal crash, aggravated vehicular homicide. Those guys are getting released. That just makes no sense to me. You're right. It's common sense. And it's not enough to give a judge discretion. You have to also have, and I've heard other folks talk about this, that there are folks that are mentally ill. They need help. They need to be detained for treatment. But that then is going to start a firestorm, Jay. That's what's going to happen. It's going to start a firestorm of folks coming, jumping in and saying, oh, well, you're violating their civil rights because you can't forcibly detain them. You can't confine them for treatment because they have to be such a risk to themselves or others. And getting through that process, the legal process, to make that determination is so burdensome. So now, I mean, I know there was one case where a judge did was able to hold someone, but you could guarantee there are going to be people weighing in on those detainments to prevent them. And meanwhile, our communities are at great risk.
Every day we cite examples. Every day we cite examples. You know, the latest one is, and then we'll move on to something else here, because, you know, it's almost ad nauseum here. I want to see some action now. Enough of this. But the latest is this guy they label the Brick Man, okay? This is an ex-con who got his nickname for allegedly the use of bricks to commit burglaries and is arrested for the fourth time on Tuesday, I was reading, in under a month, charged with burglarizing a, construction site, I think. But anyway, after each of the first three arrests, he soon walked free thanks to these reforms, only be nabbed again for fresh offenses. Cop busted him again right before Christmas for three burglaries, hauled him in for two more break-ins about 10 days later, then caught him allegedly smashing a store's door 2 weeks later. This guy, the Brick Man, ladies and gentlemen, has been arrested 75 times.
He's considered 75 that, times. That's part of the one of the changes that you and I have spoken about. And that's expanding the definition. So there's multiple things that have to be done. You're absolutely right. It's not just about discretion to judges. It's about expanding the number of violent offenses. It's about ensuring that you can confine individuals that, you know, clearly are going to be committing another offense, like robbery too and burglary too. And in Nassau County, right away, right out of the gate, soon after bail reform when it was implemented after January 1st. In Nassau County, they talked about a guy that they arrested on a burg too, who was also charged as a sexually motivated offense. So that means that somebody breaking into somebody's house to commit a sex crime is going to get re-released. I mean, that's outrageous. That makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, I'm going to go back to what you know is my tremendous strength, and that's Megan's Law. We have violent sexual predators that fail to register, and law enforcement works with local law enforcement, work with the U.S. Marshals and the state police, and you have all of these resources, these law enforcement resources pouring into finding a sexual predator, because offenders who fail to register have higher rates of recidivism, and that's no surprise to anybody. But when they finally capture that offender, whether the offender's it, wherever that offender happens to be, and he's failing to register, or she is failing to register, they release them. They bring them in and they release them, Jay. It makes no sense. So law enforcement now is in a position, it's not just obviously for sex offender failure to register, but on the robberies, the burglaries, the bank robberies, the hate crimes that are being committed against folks, the drunken driving, the fatalities, all of these things that are happening, it's made the balance completely unequal. Right now, our community is at significant risk. They have to act quickly to make these changes to protect us.
And I agree. There's just no reason why the Patrice Germains should be out in the street. This is a certified sex offender. This was the guy, a horrific story from yesterday. The guy who raped a woman after luring her to his home by pretending this guy was casting a TV show. Can you imagine that? And finally, he got a sentence to 18 years in prison. But the point is, This was a guy who was certified as a sex offender at the time of a conviction. And it's just, it's gut-wrenching to hear these stories of these things, I'll put it that way, lightly, since this is a morning show, that this thing was out in the street doing his thing.
There are a lot of issues, you know, and once I'm in the New York State Senate, I'm going to fix them. There are some serious, serious flaws, and we've talked about just some of them, serious flaws that relate to Megan's Law and, you know, what's happened since nobody's really watching Megan's Law in New York State anymore. So last time I looked, we were not in compliance with some federal standards, so that has to change. You know, right now, there's just, it's been a significant imbalance. The playing field is no longer equal. And it was not equal, so let me just make this point, and we all know it, Jay, it was not equal where you had folks that were poor that were being detained in jail because they couldn't afford to bail out. So that's wrong. But now it's completely unequal, and it has to come back to the middle. It's sort of, you know, like the inequities. So now, you know, bail reform needs significant change. And now I, you know, I know the conversation, especially after the governor's budget, the conversation now is about equalizing the funding that's going to school districts. And we have to make sure that the fix is not to lower the existing districts and the funding they're getting, but to raise up the others that are getting equality in education. Because, look, the state is required, and you know about the lawsuit for foundation funding. They haven't made the injections of funding that they were supposed to. So, you know, we like to see that. They asked, as you talked about before, there was $826 million more, but they needed $2 billion. So we have kids that are going to school that need help, and school districts are unable to be able to keep up with what they're dealing with in terms of students' needs. And even adding any kind of additional advanced programming for those kids that want to explore different options. We have some serious issues that we're going to be facing this year.
Listen, as far as the sex offender stuff, I wanted to hear more in the state of the state last week. I didn't hear it. You know, expanding the register. How many times do I have to talk about expanding that registry? You know, how many times do we have to talk about watching and monitoring how many of these guys live in a house, and especially living near a public park or a school? No one's watching the store here. How many times are we going to talk about this?
Let's keep in mind, Jay, that remember the level one offenders, because of a New York State Court of Appeals decision, level one offenders started dropping off the registry. So now keep in mind, we have in Nassau County, there's a level one offender who raped a four-year-old, Jay, and he's determined to be a low risk because the court has the discretion not to give that person a designation that would require them to register for life. The court did not give that designation. So how do you get away with raping a four-year-old child and then not have to be on the registry for life? So that particular offender is going to be possibly coaching your children after, you know, his registration is complete after 20 years. Coaching your children could be, you know, I hate to sort of bring it to the extreme, but we've had extremes where sex offenders have dressed up as Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny in malls. So now you could go back to, well, the mall should really check the registry before they hire people. Yes, they should. And we've tried to pass that legislation before, and it's not gone anywhere. So we're working really hard to try to make those changes. But it all does come down to, if you look at a level one offender in New York State, that offender only is on the registry for 20 years, and then they drop off. So unless they're given a designation, like they're considered a certain type of an offender, which that one seems to me should be considered that type of an offender. But it's the judge's discretion. So that has to change in New York State so that we could be like Florida, where in Florida, sex offenders are registered for life. And you make your own determination of risk as a parent or community member. You can look on the registry to decide whether or not you want to have any type of relationship with that particular individual in your community or not. That's what Megan's Law registration and registries are for, to make a determination whether or not you or your children are going to be having any kind of contact with that person on the registry. So the serious, serious issues are still you have sex offenders right now that are living like right on the edge of a school district's playground. That's wrong.
Disgraceful.
You can't, you know, it's just hitting, it's like hitting your head up against the wall because the folks that are really super, super liberal on crime, they don't see anything wrong with that. And it's common sense again that there's something really wrong with that.
Well, this is where Dean Murray is. His voice will be missed. He was such a leader in that regard. Really, the only guy who really concentrated on this stuff. And you just can't. I wanted a little more emphasis. I didn't get it. I don't want to hear emphasis, please, on the legalization of recreational pot, please. I don't want to hear about it. I want to hear more about the other stuff, the important stuff. Okay? And listen, we know it's going to bring in a ton of money. I get it. And eventually it'll happen, whether you like it or not. Okay? Eventually it'll happen. But there are some more serious subjects to concentrate on here for the safety. Everybody talks about public safety. All right? This is public safety number one here. Besides The Purge, the movie, The Purge 3 that is happening right now. Okay? The letting out of these individuals on the street after being incarcerated. This is also right there. Okay, with these sex offenders, more emphasis has to be made. Listen, always
exactly.
A pleasure to have
and we
you.
We made attempts to try to sort of meet folks halfway, and we wanted to many years ago require that offenders, sex offenders, would be required to get treatment while incarcerated, make it a requirement. And do you know that we were fought? They fought us on that. So you couldn't force somebody into treatment. And I suppose it would be ineffective if we did that. But what has been demonstrated statistically is that when sex offenders are in treatment, there's a reduction of recidivism. So, you know, that's likely what we're looking at is it's likely because there's additional monitoring, and that monitoring then ends up with translating to a reduction in recidivism. And I think that is now an opportunity to talk about here in Suffolk County. We implement the Community Protection Act, which is a sex offender management plan. And since we took a look at the program after 4 years, and we saw that we have reduced sex offender recidivism here in Suffolk County, working with the police department, and it's sex offender recidivism against Suffolk County residents. You know, that's significant, Jay. I mean, it's a small world, but we're talking about a sex crime not occurring. So the Community Protection Act has been really effective, and you know, and that's one of the really incredible pieces of legislation that we worked on with the county executive and also with the legislature. And I'll have you know that Legislator Calarco, Legislator Hahn, Legislator Browning, the folks that we knew back then 4 or 5 years ago on the legislature, and even Legislator Kennedy. At the time, and that was John Kennedy, they were super supportive of doing it. It passed. Everyone voted for it, and it has been effective. So we've seen a 75% reduction in recidivism. We actually have educated nearly 200,000 children in just about every corner of this county. And something else that has to be noted is that under the Community Protection Act and under some state funding we get and additional county funding, victims are entitled to reimbursement for expenses related to crime. So we've helped to facilitate the return of over $6 million to Suffolk County folks who have been victimized by crime. But we don't want to see more victimization, and under bail reform, that's exactly what we're seeing, isn't it, Jay?
Without question. Without question. I tell you, there's a lot more work to be done in this. And we await and see.
There is.
And listen, we will follow your path, obviously. Very important year and everything else. A lot up for grabs. I'll tell you, 2020 is going to be some finish. Can't thank you enough. And I am sure we will talk very soon. How's that?
Sounds good, Jay. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Laurie Ahern, of course. What a job she has done with Megan's Law, protecting kids and everything else. Social worker extraordinaire, and of course, candidate for the New York Senatorial District 1.